This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Good morning, Australia, Melbourne and the world. In that order or any other order, this is Detours on Joy 94.9. It's our fabulous expose on people's lives, their travels, their journeys, what's happening in the world, their connection to culture, and much, much more. You can join us on 0427-JOY949 anytime during the show, just by SMSing, or emailing onair at joy.org.au. And we have two people out on assignment today, Lindsay and, of course, Jodie, running around Victoria on assignment for Detours for the team. We send them Godspeed and best wishes, because I'm sure Lindsay's forgot to put petrol in her tank. And Jodie might not be out of bed yet, but they're both on assignment. We do know that. Today, we've got two very exciting guests. I'm very pleased to welcome to the Detour Studio Fadia Aboud and Alissa Ghazal.
Hello.
What beautiful names.
Thank you.
Thanks. Beautiful names. Thanks. Now, I'm not going to reveal what culture you're from.
Let them guess.
Let them guess.
What do you think I am?
What do you think I am? Okay.
You feel like sound like.
Now, are we two Aussie-born gals, or are we born?
I am. Yeah. No, I wasn't born here.
So Fadia, you were born where?
Fadia. I am Fadia, and I am born and bred in Parramatta.
Parramatta girl.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
She's a para girl. Yes.
Para chick. And my parents are Lebanese, and they met and married here, actually.
You just gave it away.
That's all right. You don't have to be Lebanese.
No, I don't have to be. I can be anything I want.
You could be.
I wasn't born here.
Where were you born, Alissa?
I was born in Lebanon, and I've been here for 40 years. I've lived here a lot longer than I did in Lebanon, so I say I would be more Aussie than Leb.
More Aussie than Leb.
But when I'm in Lebanon, they tell me I'm an Aussie, and when I'm here, they tell me I'm a Leb. So I'm a very confused chick.
Well, we're going to confuse the hell out of listeners today, because there's two parts of culture, I think, that exist. People that are born in a country and people that become aware and they've been born here and they're from a different cultural background. And I think they diverge. I think those two cultures sometimes merge away from each other. And then you add on top of that queer community. Mm. And boy,
oh, yes.
We've got a show for you today, folks. So
have
do not
ever.
Do anything between now and when Pete Dillon comes on at 1 o'clock, because we have a show for you.
Just make a big pot of coffee.
Now, I thought we might start with, how did you guys first connect? When was the first point you met each other, and where was that?
Fadia walked into a room and I couldn't take my eyes off her. We met through friends.
I love you too.
Through mutual friends.
Yeah.
In a lounge room, I think it was.
Yeah, in a lounge room. Mm. And I think I was kind of opening up to... I had a like political and sexual awakening at the same time, I think, when I was meeting all these kind of girls and boys. And that was, that was probably a while ago.
Mm.
And then Alissa started to, as one of my kind of mentors politically, artistically. We were on a film shoot together. I'll never forget that.
That's
actually,
right. Yes, that's right. Yes.
We were on a film shoot together and you were like reading coffee cups.
I was reading a coffee cup and can I tell them what I saw?
Yeah, please.
I've developed a bit of a reputation as a coffee cup reader. So we made a big pot of Lebanese coffee and poured it in these beautiful little Bedouin cups. And Fadia wanted her cup read. And I go by instinct. So I looked at the cup, and this is, real.
Before you knew anything about me,
I didn't know
where I
much
was at.
About her. That's right. I knew her. I had met her a few times, but I didn't know anything about her life. And all I saw was tits. I just saw tits and bodies and tits and tits and tits. And I just thought, look, I've got to call it for what it is. So I just said to her, I don't know what's going on in your life, but there's a lot of tits in your life. And she burst into hysterics and went red in the face. And I wanted to know what was going on. And, of course, that's when she had started her lesbian sexual awakening anyway.
Is it called Lesbian Sexual Awakening?
Well, we've named it that now.
Yeah, now it is.
You know, I'm a gay man, but I think I've had one of those too.
A lesbian sexual awakening?
Tell us.
You're a lucky man.
I think there's a lesbian being in the studio with you two. And you'll pick it up, listeners, because these are, listen to those voices, absolutely beautiful women, inside and outside, and it's coming through. So, look, I'm jumping ship. I think
uh-oh. We have a convert.
I'm becoming a lesbian too.
There's nothing wrong with that.
So your lesbian sexual awakening, how did that connect with your culture? Because if you're going to spend a large part of your formative life growing up as an Australian-born Lebanese woman in Parramatta, what's it like then to add this extra layer to the onion?
It's complicated. I think there's a film called It's Complicated. It's complicated. A lot of, you know, our queer community in Sydney always ask us, our mainstream queer community in Sydney ask us, oh, you know, how do you do it? Because a lot of people aren't, a lot of us aren't out still to our families, but are still out publicly like this. Do you know what I mean? So how do you balance that? Isn't it hard? Well, it is, but eventually you find a way to do it, and it's not hard because you want both worlds, and it's kind of those two cultures that you were kind of talking about. We want this culture that we're born and bred in and we find ourselves at peace in, but we also want our other... we want both cultures. We want our parents' culture and our new culture, and we want them both, and we can have them both, and it doesn't have to be a struggle to kind of to balance them.
But when do you have that answer? When do you get that answer that it doesn't have to be a struggle?
Oh, after a long time. When you find other people around you that are doing it the same way that you are, instead of looking at just the mainstream queer community and everyone has to be out and everyone has to, you know, live in Newtown and everyone has to, you know, go to my... Yeah. So when you see other like-minded people, which is what I saw in, like, Alisar and other women and men around me eventually, you know, you go, yeah, you can do it. You can do it that way. Because they're not always questioning you why you're not out. Go on.
Look, I have an analysis for this. When you are... If you're an Anglo-Australian, if you're a white Australian who happens to be a gay man or lesbian woman, or a lesbian man or a gay woman. the thing, one of the advantages, I think, of being an Anglo-Australian is that you're already settled in a culture. General culture, the majority culture, the dominant culture in Australia is an Anglo culture. It's a white European culture. If you come from a culture like ours, whether you're an Arab, whether you're an Asian, whether you're Greek or Italian, whether you're Turkish, whether you name it, other than if you come from a non-Anglo culture, we are constantly reminded on a daily basis that we are not and do not belong in this country for a variety of reasons. We're constantly asked where we come from. We constantly ask where does our accent come from, which I find hilarious. We're constantly reminded that we don't belong here because we are white. Now, this might sound a bit extreme to people, but, you know, put my shoes on and go for a walk one day. 40 years later, I'm still constantly asked where I come from. Fadia, who's born here, and we have friends who are third-generation Lebanese-Australians, and they're still asked, where do you come from? So culture to us is something that we have to negotiate on a daily basis. Put another layer on top of that, and that is sexual identity, right? And then another layer on that, and being a woman or a feminist, as in my case. So I have to wear many hats in this life. So my sexual identity is not my premier identity. So I think some people have the privilege of walking around wearing their sexual identity openly and freely because that is their premier identity. I have many identities to deal with on a daily basis. I have a cultural identity, I have a gender identity, I have a sexual identity, I have a political identity, and I have to negotiate those things on a daily basis.
And that voice is Alisar Ghazal. And we're going to explore some of the journeys that brought those different, I suppose, cultural understandings to Australia, to a situation where today we're sitting in the studio and we're about to talk about some really interesting journeys and some great stuff you're collaborating on together, which will, let's give them a bit of a tease. Tell us about this film festival that you guys are working on.
The Arab Film Festival, it's an 11th year. isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We started back in, was it
2001?
2001.
And you'd worked together the whole time on the film festival?
I wasn't as involved in the beginning, in the first few years, but then later on I got involved. But Fadia's
I was involved as a volunteer first in 2001, and I had my first short film in the first ever Arab Film Festival, which I loved, and it was full of short Australian films by Arab women. And then I started working at the organisation that manages the festival called Information and Cultural Exchange, ice.org.au. They do lots of cool things, and that's one of them. I started working there, and they were like, we have to carry on with this festival. Can you help us put it on? Just because I was working there, and I was like, okay, I know how to enter films in film festivals. Let's just try putting one on. And that's when I started working on it in 2004. We picked it up again, and then we had a couple of festivals kind of in different places, in different forms, and then we finally found a home in 2005 for Parramatta, and we've had a regular festival since then.
Now, that's a taste for what's to come in the rest of the show. Yes. Stay with us. You're on Detours with Greg and my two hosts, Fadia and Alyssa, and on Joy 94.9 we bring you this every weekday. So stay with us all the way through to 1 o'clock.
Let's go again.
You're on Detours. Greg Atkins is my name, and our two guests are Fadia Aboud and Alyssa Ghazal. Now, I thought we'd start with you, Alyssa. You obviously were born in Lebanon.
I was.
And the connection to Lebanon in Australia is quite strong. We've got many people in the Lebanese community. We've got people that have been here a while, but people who were born in Lebanon have made the journey. I've got good friends. George Chedid, who's been part of our show before, is a Christian man from Lebanon who returns home and travels very much now overseas in the Middle East, but he's returned home and talked about going home to Lebanon for Christmas, being a Christian in a country that's largely Muslim, and the interesting challenge is being a gay man on top of that. And ironically, the first time he came on Detours, he wasn't a gay man. But the second time he was. So that's really quite a special story. For you, did you ever think growing up as a young girl in Lebanon that you'd be sitting here in Australia as part of the queer community and in a gay and lesbian radio station?
I grew up in Lebanon having a very strong connection to Australia.
Largely because my great-grandfather came to Lebanon, to Australia in 1890 and left his family behind. So we always knew we had a link to Australia. A very fond link, because as of the 1920s and 30s, there was this constant stream of family members who left Lebanon to follow the footsteps of my great-grandfather, leading up to the early 70s when we followed. By then, of course, he was long dead, but we had already got this incredible familial link with Australia. So yes, as a child, we fantasized about getting on a plane and going to Australia, because our uncles and our cousins and our aunties and what have you were here already. And in fact, there's far more of us here than there is in Lebanon. As to thinking I was going to sit in a gay and lesbian station being interviewed, no. No, but then I hadn't by that age worked out what my sexuality was, what direction my sexual tendencies were going to take.
Now, I'll take you right back. Your first journey here, when you travelled here with your family.
Yes.
How old were you?
I was 13.
Now, describe that journey.
Eye-opening.
In what way?
I grew up in a small village in the mountains, like 1,000 metres above sea level, and ultimate snow in winter and beautiful summers. And it wasn't a city girl. We only went to cities, you know, to visit, and that was once in a blue moon. So I was always amazed by cities. I loved them. I loved the traffic. I loved the noise. But then, of course, we'd go and live in a small country town where the first noise you hear in the morning was either a rooster or a donkey. The first thing I remember was having to get up those steps to get to the plane. No, they didn't have those gates. So we got off a bus, we walked up on the tarmac, and I remember the steps being really steep and high, and all I could see was those lines on the steps, and then suddenly this massive, it was the first time I've ever been in a plane, You only see them flying in the air, but to actually be inside one and being so young. I mean, the planes don't look so big these days, but as a kid, it was just like mind-blowing, a mind-blowing experience. And I was the only one in the family who spoke any English. And so, of course, I couldn't sleep because mom and dad were constantly going, what are they saying? What are they saying now? Well, what's the captain saying? Is the plane falling down? Well, you know, they were really nervous. My parents were, I think, found it really, really hard. We really underestimated it. So, of course, we stopped in Bangkok. We stopped in Singapore. And, of course, then we landed in Melbourne instead of Sydney because the Sydney airport closes at 11 p.m. And we had some mechanical problems in Singapore, so the plane couldn't take off immediately. And by the time we arrived to Australia, we had to go all the way to Melbourne. And the funniest thing is we have family in Melbourne, we have family in Sydney, and they all flew en masse from Melbourne to Sydney to welcome us at the airport, only to find that the plane wasn't going to land in time, so they all flew back. So they all flew back, and I remember going through customs and being the only one who was asked questions by the customs agent. But walking into the customs area and seeing, and don't forget, this is the 70s, seeing long, tall, white men with blue eyes and beards and long hair and jeans and hippies. Hippies are things that, I mean, I used to watch Mod Squad. I just thought everyone in the West looked like Mod Squad, and they did, except for the afros, you know. So I had this image of what the West looked like based on what I was watching on TV, and some of it was coming true and some of it wasn't. And so we went through customs really easily, and the guy said, okay, you can go now. And I was like, where the hell are we going to go? You know, all our relatives and are in Sydney. But, of course, we went out and they were all out there. So my first reaction of Melbourne was nighttime in March, and it was warm. But the next day, Sydney was blasting hot furnace on the tarmac, and we flew ANSET. And I don't know. I just loved it. My eyes went like this. They just opened up really wide, and I just wanted to absorb everything. And I think that scared the hell out of my parents.
They recovered.
I don't think they ever recovered. I think my parents always knew I was going to be a troublesome young woman because I was the oldest. I was smartest. And out of the two boys, there was only three of us. And I was out there. I just wanted to swallow up the world. And it really scared my parents. My father never felt so protective of me in Lebanon, because he felt comfortable in his surroundings and his culture. He understood it. But he comes here, he's semi-illiterate. He wants to work. He wants to earn a living. He wants to give us a better future. And I'm swallowing up the world. And he couldn't cope. And so you could imagine what it would be like for him to have to deal with a woman who was smart and savvy and just wants to be out there. Can you imagine me going out to him and say, guess what, now I'm a lesbian dad. Like, there's no way he could have dealt with that. So that was one secret I kept from him.
Was it deliberately kept until he passed away?
Yes, he. I think it was more protecting him rather than me.
Any regrets now?
No. I don't think he was a man who could deal with something like that. He wasn't a traditionalist. I mean, he was politically he was a leftist. He suffered for his politics. He was open-minded. He was inclusive of all people. But I think there are some things that people find really hard to deal with if they've never had to confront it. So if you've never met gay people in your life and then suddenly you're confronted with it, takes a while to get used to. And I wanted to make sure that I wasn't the first gay person he met.
And you weren't the first gay person he met?
Look, my brother once said to me, you know what, I think my parents always knew, because you really weren't the marrying kind. You're always really butch. You're always really tough. You're always threatened. You'd never marry or have kids. I had a nickname. I had a nickname in Arabic, was Hassan Sabi, you know, which was the equivalence of tomboy. Everyone knew I was the one who climbed the trees and climbed the mountains. And, you know, I was the one who did all the boyish things. So I think my parents suspected, but a lot of parents do that, but they always expect, I think, their daughters to end up settling down. I never did. I tried to come out to my mother. She told me to shut up and eat my dinner. So I think she knew.
And your mum's still alive?
No, they both, unfortunately, have gone, yes.
What's it like now, then, in terms of connecting to culture when the two significant people in your family are no longer with you?
Look, I do it with friends, some family members, but predominantly I do it with friends, and I think that's why I'm involved in community events and like the Arab Film Festival. I still speak fluent Arabic and I still read it. I can't write it. So that gives me a link. I still visit Lebanon. I care about what goes on in the Middle East and the politics of the Middle East. And I love the culture that comes out of there, whether it's films or whether it's music. And one of the things that I love about working with Fadia is that we both managed to marry our interest in the culture with two big events. And one is the Arab Film Festival and the other one is a gay and lesbian dance party that we have with Arab beats. So, well, I don't know, it's the best of both worlds, really.
What's the dance party called?
Club Arak.
Club Arak.
Arak, yes.
You'll have to tell us more about when it's coming up a bit later in the show.
We will.
Now, that voice you're listening to is Alisar Ghazal. We've unpacked her a bit. We're going to talk more with you, but we're also going to unpack shortly Fadia's story a little bit more and find out more.
I want to talk a bit more about the festival.
Well, let's do that, but we're going to play a little bit of music first.
Oh, okay,
yes.
Cool.
We've got for you, I'll try and get it right. It's Amr Diab with Habibi.
Amr Diab.
Oh, did you get this one?
Yeah. Habibi, which was the name of our film last night from Palestine.
Brilliant. You're on Joy 94.9 with Dieter. Stay with us.
Joy 94.9.
And here on Detours, you're spending an afternoon with two beautiful women, Alisar Ghazal and Fadia Aboud. They're both from the Arab Film Festival, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We'll talk about that now. It runs for how many days and how many nights?
Okay, it runs for 3 days at the moment at the Cinema Nova, the coolest cinema in town. And last night we had our first film at 7 o'clock. It was called Habibe, which was the name of that song by Amr Diab, Habibe Wala Ala Bele. But this one was from Palestine, and the real title is called Habibe Rasi Kharban, which means my darling, my head's crazy. And it's about a guy and girl that are desperately in love but can't be together. Mainly because he's from a poorer family. It's about class. It's a Romeo and Juliet story, but added to that drama is the story of, you know, people living in Gaza under Israeli occupation. So not only can they not be together, but they can't even escape and be somewhere else. They can't leave. They're trapped. And so it makes for a beautiful love story. We screened that
film
last night. It is Habibe.
And there's the irony, isn't it? If here it's about class, it's about the inability to move somewhere, to be together outside of where you are. And it's the same with sexualities, isn't it, in a way? It's not class, it's about difference and about the inability to marry the two differences together. And that often keeps us apart. It must be difficult for people back in some of the Arab countries where it's even harsher on people that are same-sex attracted. Mm.
Well, actually, in Lebanon, say, for instance, let's say Lebanon has a huge, roaring gay scene and strong community. Like in Beirut on a Monday night, I can go out to a lesbian bar packed with girls, whereas I can't do that in Sydney.
Or Melbourne.
Cannot do it. Packed with girls to the brim. And homosexuality is still illegal in Lebanon, in the Arab world.
But they're not afraid. There are gay and lesbian bars throughout the Middle East. Some of them are quite underground. Some of them are out in the open. And the only difference is that there's something in the constitution that says it's illegal, and there's something in religious belief that says it's a sin. But these people have existed for centuries. We've been there since millennia. Homosexuality is not new. I just think that what's happening is with the internet and incredible websites like Facebook and what have you, people communicate a lot quicker and a lot easier with each other. And media makes a lot more stories available to us on a daily basis, or more like actually on minute by minute. So people are aware of what's going on and what stories are happening. Unfortunately, I think the West tends to concentrate on a lot of the negatives in the Arab world rather than positives. We only hear negative stories coming out of the Arab world. We don't hear about, you know, an amazing NGO, for instance, in in Beirut called Hilm, which I've been working for the last 3 years solidly with the Lebanese government at removing that clause in the constitution that makes homosexuality illegal. The fact that the same people have been working quite well in Lebanon to give more rights to, let's say, domestic workers who are usually from Sri Lanka or the Philippines, at eliminating issues of discrimination in Lebanon, at working at eliminating a sectarian political system and bringing in a secularist political system. So they're really politically active, but we don't hear about that. We just hear, they closed down this disco, and in Iran they went and hung someone because he was gay.
But isn't that a fault really of our gay commentators who only focus on those narrow points of view?
They're
only focusing on what actually resonates with them. They actually don't understand.
They don't look at the big picture. And that's what I was trying to say earlier. You can't just concentrate on one single identity of a culture. A culture has many faceted identities, and you can't just concentrate on the sexual part of that identity. There are so many elements to one's identity. So, yes, I think in the gay and lesbian press, we do concentrate purely on that one issue.
I think
we don't look at it holistically.
Now, what do you think out there? 0427JOY949 or on air at joy.org.au. I've got a perception that part of this is because when we travel, we actually rarely engage with people that live in local areas. Sometimes we do, but maybe gay and lesbian community does more than straight community around engaging other gays or other lesbians when they travel, or even trans people. But the issue is we sometimes only see over there what connects with our experience back home.
I think that's human nature. I think humans tend to do that. You see what you know. And if you don't, if there's something that you don't know or don't understand, we know it ourselves when we're traveling overseas. There are some things we avoid instinctively because we don't feel comfortable with. So naturally, we pull away from that. But people see what they know. And the West tends to do that a lot. They have a perception of the Arab world that has existed for thousands of years. And they never seem to move away from that, to the point that I think Western media and Western politicians tend to believe their own stereotype images of what the Arab world is.
So, Alisara and Fadia, does this film festival offer you a chance to break down those misconceptions?
Well, that's exactly what we're hoping. I mean, people come to the festival that usually already support Arab stuff and Arab culture and are there with it. But then we get a lot of people, especially in Melbourne, I find a lot of people, because it's just a cinema, people just walk up. People just walk into the cinema and are deciding then and there what to see. And they're open to seeing an Arab film, and they will be the ones that we can really, convert,
Convert.
Yeah.
Well, you've converted me. I'm a lesbian after those shows. That's all right. That's cool.
Our title for this year, like every year we have a title for the festival. Our title this year is Do You See What I See? And we want people to see the Arab world through Arab eyes, not through Western eyes. And so there's this amazing diversity of stories that are being told, whether we're talking about the revolution in the street, whether we're talking about sexual politics, gender politics between men and women, whether we're talking about gay politics, whether we're talking about governments against people, whether we're talking about love, whether we're talking about poverty. There's such a diversity of stories that are being told. And you see them in those cinema, in those films. I mean, it covers all different aspects of life.
Tonight's film is from Egypt, and it's about a woman living with HIV/AIDS in Cairo. And it's about how she can't get medical treatment and she can't afford it. And the only way she can afford it is if she goes on this talk show. They've offered her, you have to expose yourself. Because they do want to talk about these issues, but everyone's scared. So these are the kind of revolutions that were happening, on a personal level before the big revolution. And it's based on a true story. And it shows a support group of men and women living with AIDS in Cairo and how they deal with it and how it's that where they become your family, like you do in it, like we have in our queer culture.
I have a perception that tonight people aren't just going to see the culture, it's going to impact and connect with them. Now, one part of culture that often impacts and connects is food. In a few weeks, Cravings, the show at 1 o'clock here at Joy, will be focusing on halal food, a whole range of things, and Pete Dillon joins us here in the studio.
Good afternoon. This is an intriguing discussion, and it's interesting to hear the way you're presenting this, that we're only given some very small snippets of what Arab culture is. So I think this will be a remarkable festival. I congratulate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
In a couple of weeks, we'll be looking at some cultural diversity in food, so halal, kosher, those sorts of things that we don't quite understand. We think we do, but we don't. Today, however, on a recommendation from Jodie Wilmer a couple of weeks ago, she said, can you do a show about intolerances and allergies and celiacs and da-da-da-da-da-da. So we're sort of doing that today with a dietitian and nutritionist. We'll have a look at what an allergy to food is and what an intolerance to food is and how they affect. And then we're also going to look at, there's an event coming up, the world's best BYO, that they're doing one here in Melbourne, one in Sydney. Andrew McConnell and Peter Gilmore, two of Australia's best chefs. $1,000 a head, you take along a bottle of wine that you think will match, and they'll choose who's bought the best BYO to this event. So Andrew McConnell's coming in. This is all in aid of charity. It's for Cure for Cancer. So we're sort of going to weave between food making a difference, intolerances and allergies, and, you know, foods that may actually be carcinogens that we probably should avoid. So it's going to be quite an interesting program today.
Well, cancel lunch. There's going to be no moving away from the radio between 1 and 2 today for cravings.
Yes, I will see you in 15 minutes.
Thanks, Pete Dillon.
Cheers.
Definitely stay with us. That's going to be a really interesting show. And in 2 weeks' time, when we hear about different cultural foods as well, it'll be fantastic. We're going to play a bit more music. Tell us about the music we're going to play now.
Well, this is a very popular woman, Nancy Ajram. She's a Lebanese. She sings with an Egyptian dialect. She is sexy as, and she's so loved at our dance parties. So listen up, folks.
Ahunas.
You're on Dieter's with Fahia and Alisar. Stay with us through to one with Pete Dillon. Beautiful music. Tell me more about this.
Nancy Ajram. She's a hot chick from Lebanon. This is called Awnus, which means and a half. And she's very popular. She's a gay icon. This is Nancy. And look her up on YouTube and listen to her music. She's hot.
We play her at Club Hara. So Club Hara, most people without the accent say Club Iraq. Club Iraq is the party that we put on, and we play all this kind of music, Arab dance, pop, mainstream Arab music, not alternative kind of Arab, but just really mainstream Arab music that you won't hear anywhere else. But you can hear it in a queer environment in Sydney on the 10th of November at the Imperial Hotel. And we've been doing this for 10 years.
It's the Arab dance. Awesome. It's Arab dance beats for queers of all color. That's our motto.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah,
and yes, we have been doing it for 10 years. It's been very successful, and we get an incredible diversity of gays and lesbians that come to the party, including straight people. They're always crashing, they're always coming in.
Now, you started about 8 years ago, but you were there, Alisar, at the start 10 years ago
of your
dance party.
No, we actually 10 years ago. No, you might be mistaken. Oh, with the festival.
The festival.
Yeah, no, Fadia and I actually sat down. Actually, Fadia started the trend by having these parties in her lounge room.
Really?
And we decided, I think the time has come to really do something big here and take it somewhere else. Because, you know, we enjoy this music. I'm sure everyone else will. So we decided to take a big gamble and held our first party November 2002 at Caesars in Sydney at Camberdown. And
so it's 10 years this year.
10 years, yeah. Whoa. 10 years this year. And we thought, oh my God, no one's really going to enjoy this.
No one's going to come except our friends.
That's right. We thought we'll be lucky to get 100 people. And we went outside and there was a line around the block, you know, 350 people, 400 people showed up that night. And it's been going strong ever since. There's been times where we've had over 1,000 people come to our event. So, yes, November 10th is at the Imperial at Erskineville in Sydney is going to be...
A next party. You can find it on Facebook.
Yes. Yeah, find it on Facebook.
Arak means...
Sweat, and also is an alcoholic drink, which is like ouzo. And so it's a play on words, and our other motto is prepare to sweat.
Well, you know what? You'll be able to check out joy.org.au/detours, and through our Facebook and Twitter links, we'll promote your party as well.
Thank you.
And I hope you could come.
Well, I think it's going to be worth a journey. To,
yeah.
Some of the men on the, you know, the Arab
they're hot.
Men are hot.
Lots of bears and lots of skinnies. So you pick. Hairy, not hairy.
Now, we've had a few listeners connect with us. We've had someone asking, what generation are these lovely women? Very nice discussion. How would you describe your generations? That's a good question. I want to see who
you'd
have.
What, you mean they want to know how old we are? I'm not ashamed of saying I'm 53.
53 is a great
age. Yeah, Fad is much younger. She's a baby.
I just turned 40. And I'm loving it too. Not worried about it at all.
You're the same as Jodie. Jodie just turned 40 as well.
I remember Fadia crying once when she told me she was going to turn 28. So, so you know.
Fantastic. Oh, and also here we've got a lovely interview, and that's Donna Frock. Thank you for SMSing Donna. Well done. And valid points. We need to get outside our comfort zones.
Definitely.
Would you agree with that totally? Or are there sometimes you've got outside your comfort zone and you wish you could put it back in again?
Well, you need to know what's out there to before you decide whether or not that suits you. It's just, it's important to kind of open yourself up to everything and everyone. And that's just as good as learning and going to uni and studying a subject. You know, you need to go out and see what other people are doing. And
we live in a globalised world. Mm. Economically, it's globalised, but sometimes consciously it's not. And I think it's important to see what's out there. And don't believe everything you read and see on TV. A lot of things are cooked up.
Well, this comes back to this next
question. WikiLeaks have already told us.
We have a question that Moshin said, a listener rang, he's our support, and thank you, Moshin, for supporting us here. He said a listener rang Joy while we were on air saying a feedback was that hanging penalty for homosexuals was significant and thought the interview should focus more on that.
Now, why?
And that's a good question.
Why would I want to focus on some stupid government hanging everything from criminals to gays? They see it as a crime. I'm not going to argue with them. I think the important thing is to focus on people who are trying to make those changes and give them the support rather than condemn a whole society, a whole culture, because we've got some hard heads in government who refuse to see otherwise. That, you know, not long ago, it was illegal to be gay or a lesbian in Tasmania, of all places. Not long ago. I remember when that law was changed. And yet we so hardcore when it comes to, oh, those countries considered illegal. Well, not long ago, you couldn't walk down the street holding hands with someone in Oxford Street.
Well, do we stop people from going and being part of the diverse gay and lesbian community that exists in places like Lebanon? Mm. You know,
but if that's what they know about the hanging penalty for homosexuality. Everyone knows about that. I mean, let's learn about something else. Come and hear about something else. Come and hear about what's happening in Cairo tonight, you know, about people living with HIV/AIDS and how they're existing and living and supporting each other.
I think that's the important message. There's a whole rainbow that we're part of. We exist in this huge, diverse community. And within that, there are many stories and many cultures and many happenings in people's lives within Arab communities, which you'll hear of through this film festival.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow we have a film set in Trablus in Lebanon. Now, at the moment, Trablus in Lebanon is like a bit out of control. So there's a lot happening. It's, you know, there's a lot of tension, and which is kind of spilled over from Syria. And that's what you've probably been hearing on the news. But if tomorrow night's film is not about that at all. It's about a 40-year-old guy still living with his mother, and one day she's had enough of him and she leaves. And it's a coming-of-age story, really. But he's 40 and he owns a sweet shop and, you know,
he
doesn't
know what to do with himself.
I'm not quite sure if he's a virgin. I'm not quite sure who he's into, what he's into, but it's such a great little film. And so that's what you need to know as well about Tripoli.
Where do you find these films? There's a fantastic selection of films.
We put out an international call, like many film festivals, and we get hundreds of films. It's really hard when you've got a festival that only goes for 4 days or 3 days. It's really hard to choose out of hundreds of films, but they're out there and they're amazing and they tell an incredible story that we don't necessarily see on our Australian television.
Well, Fadia Abud and Elsa Ghazal, what's going to hold for you in the next year or two? Where do you see yourselves in a couple of years' time?
I'm hoping Fadia would do her film or television. I'm hoping I'd finish my documentary. And we are hoping to see you guys at the next Arab Film Festival as well as Club Arak.
I'm sure we will. Thanks for joining us here on Detours today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I look forward to hearing the podcast later on tonight.
Thank you so much.
Arab Film Festival, Melbourne. It's on now. And we'll see you at Club Arak.
Okay.
Yalla, bye.
Bye for now.
Yalla, bye.
Bye, everyone. See you next week.
You'll never need to miss another show. Check out the Joy Podcasts, joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.